You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Mmm, delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthwell, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. How you doing? Gosh, it's like 2 or 3 weeks in a row now that I've been here. I'm showing up. It's a good thing. I haven't gotten a relapse. Anyway, today out in the little teeny tiny hamlet of Freestone, it was packed. Guest here on Mouthful a few weeks ago was Omar of the Freestone Artisan Cheese Shop, and that's where I was signing books. He also had, I think it was Gypsy Cheese Company, and a company, let me dig out the business card, De Buffalo Dairy and Creamery, which makes buffalo milk ice cream. And it was actually really, really good. Oh, really rich and smooth. And there were other things going on. I never got a chance to leave because we were busy. But there were other things going on. It was called A Taste of Freestone. The bakery was involved. A lot going on at Osmosis, Joseph Phelps' tasting room, and a couple of other locations. So that little sleepy hamlet really came alive today, and it was a lot of fun. Hope you are enjoying this spectacular fall so far. The weather is just gorgeous. And somebody who came in today, she had the first Fuyu persimmons. There's pomegranates already, but tomatoes are still really, really good. So it's that season where so many things are intersecting. And speaking of intersecting, we're going to intersect with two Italian families this evening. We have Rob Della Santina, a great restaurant over in Sonoma. It's been there 25, 30 years at least, and I don't get there anywhere near as often as I wish I did, but I still remember the fabulous gnocchi I had in the early 90s. We also have with us Anthony Scotto. I say? Scotto. I knew I was going to get it wrong. Scotto of Scotto.
Sellers.
Scotto Sellers, okay. I knew it wasn't just plain old winery. So Scotto Sellers in...
Well, we actually have a winery in Lodi.
Oh, in Lodi.
We have a winery in Napa.
Okay.
And we also have a winery in Amador County.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So wineries in all three places.
We do. I have five brothers and sisters, so we spread it across. It's a true family business.
Yeah, no kidding. And it's been five generations so far, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so there's five generations originated in Procida and Ischia along the Amalfi Coast.
Mm-hmm.
From there, my great-grandparents immigrated to New York City, where my grandfather and my father started their wine careers, and then I was born and raised here in California.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
And then let's get Rob. When did Della Santina open?
We opened in 1990. In downtown Sonoma, so it's about 20, we're working on pushing 24 years, yes.
When I was there, I reviewed it gosh.
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah, it felt like it had been there for a really long time.
Well, my dad's been in the business for about almost 45 years now. So,
where did he start at?
My dad came to San Francisco in 1960, immigrated from Lucca,
from
Tuscany,
Lucca.
Just like most of the Italians in the North Bay here. Yeah. But came to San Francisco as a baker originally, mm-hmm. used to bake bread, and followed my great uncle here, who came originally before the war, and started with Original Joe's in the Marina, and then moved to Marin and opened Marin Joe's in 1954.
Oh, so know it well.
We've been doing it for a while. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So,
yeah, and then Della Satina. So he took the family name.
Yeah, we the trattoria, what we try to do is Tuscan country cooking, so very simple, you know, like you would eat, you know, your grandmother's house. That's the concept. Mm-hmm. It's very, you know, farm grown, raised, mm-hmm. You know, farm to table kind of cooking. What's in style right now has been done for centuries.
Yeah.
In Tuscany, that's the way you live. So that's what we try and do.
Cool. So. Also with us tonight is Bradley Gray, the man who's now glaring at me, who made this happen, called me with the idea, and I said, yeah, sure. So he's our server tonight. He's our bottle opener. And what should we start out with? You guys are drinking.
We are.
I guess we should start out with some wine.
Okay,
so you're drinking something white, and I can't see the label.
It's a little bit of SB that we're it's private label by one of the gentlemen that
would be Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon Blanc. Okay.
So, like, you need to pour me some, Bradley.
And I didn't pour you some.
No.
Okay, I'm getting up right now,
Brad. You're already failing at the one job you have.
Oh, this is really bad.
Well, I'm a big fan of Sauvignon Blanc, and this is from...
This is a little private label.
Della Santa, okay.
Yeah, it's our own little label. One of the gentlemen that works me, Jesus Hernandez, he's been making a private label called Alma for a while, but he makes a little private label for a little SB out of the Valley, Simo Valley fruit. But simple.
Valley fruit.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we also do a label called Our Cellars, which we're going to do a little bit of Pinot with. That's all from Russian River. So,
okay. And where is this available?
That's available strictly at the restaurant
and
at the Enoteca. We have a wine shop.
Yeah, now, when did you add the wine shop?
Well, we opened the Enoteca in 2007, so it's a new addition. Mm-hmm. So what we try and do is promote wines, whether it's in the Valley or from all over the world. So I have a large Italian and French, Spanish. Portfolio wines on the wall, so we do the whole. Our focus is Enoteca is wine education, mm-hmm. so that's what the Enoteca is supposed to be. So.
And is it entirely separate from the restaurant?
It actually connects. It's connected to the restaurant, so it's kind of a nice addition. So we have a place for people to wait if they're waiting for a table, but somewhere to go after dinner. So it works out really well.
Go after dinner, have a glass of wine.
Yeah, exactly. We do. We do ports and aperitifs and stuff like that. So it's worked out really well. So the wine bar's open a little bit later.
Uh-huh.
So we stay up usually till about 11. So in Sonoma,
that's like
2 o'clock in the morning somewhere else.
Yeah.
So
like 4 in the morning in Sebastopol.
You know, we get the sleepy town in Sonoma. We try and push it a little bit. Uh-huh. So it's great. It's been going great.
Well, this is a really nice Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, super inexpensive. Yeah, I think this retails, $13-$14. It's not expensive.
Oh, wow. Great value.
It's not expensive.
Great value.
Yeah, it's not expensive. So
We
use it as a house SB, so it's kind of...
House SB.
Sauvignon Blanc, excuse me.
You know, Michelle, you've got a pretty tall order here tonight that both of these guys grew up cutting their chops on Sunday night dinner at their grandparents' houses. And now it's Sunday night. And,
exactly.
Oh, gosh. And I'm not feeding
early.
You. You're feeding me.
I did it early. I barbecued some Tuscan chicken with my three kids and my wife at 3 o'clock. So we did it early so we could get here on time. And it was fun.
You know, I wish that was something we could establish here. I've tried at different times to really establish it here. Yeah. And, I mean, just with my minuscule family. And it's just not something I've ever been able to pull off. Well, you know, maybe I need some more Italians in my life.
We were pretty fortunate. I grew up across the street from my grandparents' house, and I am the oldest grandson of my grandfather's oldest son. So I'm Anthony Dominic Scotto III, and it was very easy for us to venture across the street to the winery in the Livermore Valley, and every Sunday it was dinner at my grandparents' house. Mm-hmm. And you'll see when we get to some of our wines, I think I only brought some reds, but our wines are, excuse me, very typical of, I think, the Sunday night Italian family dinner experience.
Mm-hmm.
It was always everything revolved around food. It wasn't as if it revolved around the actual wine itself. Wine was just an extension of food
right,
itself.
Yeah.
So our family's very, very large. And while my grandmother or my father and my uncles were arguing about the family business, my grandfather took the time to explain to me why we were having different wines different during different courses. Brad, you're going to get fired over here. But it was mostly about getting together as a family. And I was very fortunate to have, I think, an oral history that was passed down by my grandfather over dinner. And it was, we always started with pasta, and then we had some type of fish or poultry, and then we had salad at the end. And all throughout the course, even prior to, it was enjoying wine.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't wine.
Now, when you were a kid, were you given watered-down wine?
Absolutely, yeah. And what our family really cut their teeth on were what you would consider, I guess, a jug wine. And we still produce it. It's mm-hmm. a very ethnic family, mm-hmm. ethnic Italian 4-liter jug. It's one of the oldest brands in America. We
what
still make
it. What goes
into it? Everything but the kitchen sink.
Okay.
But the primary varietal that people definitely miss if it's not in is Muscat, and it brings a lot of flavors and uh-huh. a lot abundance of fruit. It's a 16%.
Wow.
It's a fortified red.
I guess you water it
homemade
down.
Homemade style wine, yeah.
That'll work.
Interesting. You know, we've got a jug wine here in Sonoma County. Thank you for the paper towels, Bradley. You're almost forgiven. don't worry. Preston Vineyards makes a jug wine. And they do Jug Sunday. You have to go up there on a Sunday, and they fill the jug, and it's based on the Italian what the Italians were drinking Fantastic. In Dry Creek Valley. You know,
you'd be shocked to know how many cases of jug wines we still produce. It's the brand's Villarmondo Vino Rustico, and the only time I get complaints are written complaints from our customers who are typically between the ages of 70 and 100. Is whether we've changed the cap that we're using, whether the glass is different, or how dare you change the blend in our wine. So there's really a, to use, I guess, a technical term, but there's a certain consumer franchise there with people who have been mm-hmm. drinking this wine forever. And that was the foundation of our dinners at the uh-huh. Scotto household was really just the wine itself.
Uh-huh. That's so fun. And it reminds me a little bit of what Francis Coppola is doing up at his winery, and his Sonoma winery, on Tuesday nights. He has a tavola,
nice,
and they just bring out platters of food,
yeah.
And everyone is costumed. All the staff is costumed nice. By his costume designer, based on what he remembers from Sunday dinners.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's great, and you know, there's his grandmother, and his grandmother is at the winery. His grandmother's in her 20s. She's pregnant. She's smoking a fake cigarette and drinking a fake
wow.
martini. And, I mean, there's guys walking around in 30 suits with fake cigar. I mean, it's so fun. And he talks about how, and Archimedes, I think Archimedes is his wine that is based on what he remembers drinking then. That's fantastic. They made like in Brooklyn or something. So I love Italian families, and I love the way Italian families live around the table.
It was really interesting. I don't know if Rob's had these experiences, but I married a non-Italian, and she got a baptism by fire, spending some time in Italy with my family, and her family's from Nebraska. So the experiences that they've had were very different than our loud, obnoxious, passionate discussions that we had over the dinner table. And, you know, I've had many discussions with my wife, Alyssa, where she would say, I can't believe you and your sister, or you and your dad, or you and your mother, or you and your grandpa or uncle, what were you guys arguing about? And I look at her with this puzzled look like, Alyssa, we weren't arguing. You know, we were talking about whatever it may have been, but the passion, I think, translates also or transcends from what we're discussing to our business, to the wineries themselves, to our wines, and how we relate to our customers.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a contrast to, you can draw so many comparisons, but those stiff, you know, say Northern Europeans who didn't talk during meals. And plus, very recently, and I'm not going to say what restaurant this was, but a restaurant in San Francisco, somebody wrote about their staff meal, and it's a very high-end restaurant, 4 stars, whatever, and it's like, during the staff meal, no one spoke. You could hear a pin drop. I was like, and this is a good thing? Get me back to some Italian restaurant, you know, and start an argument. Anyway, I love it. So what are we drinking?
So this is our first Napa product. Our family produced a Napa blend, and it's called Napa by Napa. And it's the acronyms of four of my 6 brothers and sisters. So it's Natalie, Anthony, Paul, and Ann. And then my brother Michael. So it's Napa by Napa, Michael's Red.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
so there's seven. Wait, there's seven.
There's
of
6
you?
Of us.
Okay, 6.
On the label.
Okay.
Everyone on the label except my sister Bianca, who just graduated from high school. So there's quite a gap. I'm 35, and my youngest sister Bianca is 18. So she's the only one that didn't make the cut.
This is drinking nice, by the way.
Thank you.
What is it?
Well, it's a blend. There's 5 different varietals. Okay. Primarily, we use a lot of Merlot, a little bit of Cab Franc, I believe.
Fantastic.
But for us, really, the focal point is not varietal-based, but it's flavor profile.
It's very smooth.
Yeah.
It's very satiny. I would not have guessed this as having a lot of Merlot.
And, you know, Michelle, this is really the first product to come from their new Napa Valley facility up there by Lake Berryessa.
Oh, by Lake Berryessa?
Yeah, we're 121 and 128 Meat.
Okay.
Our property there, we lease the facility. It is called Steel Canyon Cellars. It's on Steel Canyon Road.
Okay,
and it's been an incredible experience. It's very different than how we make wine in Lodi. In Lodi, we do large quantities. Where in Napa, everything is small batch.
Very small.
So my brother Paul, who graduated from UC Davis, he's the winemaker for all of our different wineries. He really had the pick of the litter there. It was a great experience for him because there was really nothing that we shortcut at all. It was the best of everything, whether it was the fermentation process, the grapes that we purchased, and I think it expresses itself in the wine. And what we always try to do is the wines that we want, that we produce, they have to be affordable. And this particular product here, the Napa by Napa, it retails typically under $15. And we've had tremendous success with it. It's been a lot of fun.
This is really lovely. One thing, and I don't want to insult Napa, but I wouldn't assume immediately this was a Napa wine because I'm used to Napa's being a lot bigger and more tannic. And it's just really, it's got that silky quality that I really like.
I appreciate it, Michelle. Yeah.
And what's the alcohol level? Too.
Alcohol is under 14%.
Okay, I was going to say it's not real high.
Again, it goes back to those family dinners where, for us, wine was always something that participated with food.
Yeah,
if we were going to have a cocktail, and I don't remember my grandparents or my father really having cocktails, but they would have a scotch or some type of vodka drink. They weren't drinking wine as a cocktail. Wine was something that went with whatever dishes were being prepared.
Yeah.
And that's how we want the wines to complement whatever food is being served.
It's a lost art in the industry too, in the restaurant industry, because we get people, when they come into dinner, they're looking at the wine list first and not at the menu first. So they ask me, what should I drink tonight? And my question back to them is, well, what are you going to have for dinner tonight? Yeah. Then we can discuss what you're going to drink. Yeah. And people go about it, you know, they're in the valley.
Oh, so,
and
okay,
you know, their first thing is they want to drink whatever, you know, they're told to drink, and because it's expensive, number one, or because it's a very famous label, or instead of actually, you know, going back to the source of exactly what Anthony's talking about, is that you pairing wine and food to make the experience better.
Make it happy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why that's the interesting thing for me was doing that. We do a dinner in the wintertime called Tuesdays in Tuscany, where we do a 4-course dinner. Mm-hmm. That time of the year I can actually talk to customers and explain the wines, but we do a 4-course dinner where we just pair. I do the pairings, a different wine from Tuscany with each course, and people go, oh my God, I haven't had a pairing like that since I was in Florence or since I was in Siena. And I look at myself, I'm like, well, they were in Siena, or they were in Florence, or they were in Lucca, where we're from, and they were drinking wine from the Colline, which is exactly what Anthony said. It's a blend of maybe 75 grapes from the field. It's a field blend.
Field blend, yeah.
And they happen to be paired with a food from that town that's been created over the last 400 years. So it's a perfect food and wine pairing. And they think it's a magical thing. It's not, and it's, you know, it's a table wine, so it's very inexpensive.
Yeah.
But it's a perfect match. So it's, and not, that it's not
like
complicated.
A great thing, Tuesdays in Tuscany.
Yeah,
we're going to talk more about that.
It's a little corny, but it works.
No, it works. And we're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be right back with more food and more wine.
Ci sei tu, al di là del sogno più ambizioso, ci sei tu, al di là delle cose più belle, al di là delle stelle, ci sei tu. Ci sei tu per me, soltanto per me. Al di là del mare più profondo, ci sei tu. Al di là dei limiti del mondo, ci sei tu. Al di là della volta infinita, al di là della vita, ci sei tu, al di là, ci sei tu.
Aldila by Emilio Pericoli, one of the best slow dancing songs there is. And that was played for the fabulous Sebastopol band, the Don Giovannis. They played, Carlo has been their male singer since they were formed 5 years ago. And they played at Festa Italiana today. And Carlo, for now, has moved to Florida to take care of his father. And so I don't know what's going to happen with the Don Giovannis. I don't know if they will continue. But Carlo played the most beautiful version of Al di La. And on their most recent CD, they actually mentioned me in that song, because every time they played it, I made a fool of myself. Anyway, Carlo, great. Have really a successful, helpful time in Florida. But come back to see us, okay? And Don Giovannis, don't give up. Find another singer for now. Okay, we are talking about Italy. And now we are going to eat some Italian food. Oh, my God. A lot of Italian food. It's a big old portion of what looks like...
It's a little tortelli. So it's traditional Lucchese style. We say ravioli, but ravioli are cheese filled. Normally tortelli are meat filled. Mm-hmm. And this is a little bit of a wild boar ragu.
Wild boar ragu. It smells so good.
This is the actual reason why I came, was to eat.
Well, hopefully. You can't sit at your grandmother's table on a Sunday night. You might as well sit in a radio station.
Exactly.
You know what's so interesting is we talk about my grandmother. My grandmother never cooked. It was always the men in the family that cooked.
Exactly.
What was your grandmother's name?
Really Teresa.
Teresa.
Yes, Teresa. And it was always... My father wasn't a cook, but my grandfather and my two uncles, that they were the ones that prepared all the food.
Yeah.
And how about in your families? Well, the men or the women or both?
You know, it's a little bit of both. So my grandmother's name was Pia Della Santina, but maiden name Fontana. So she actually, the amazing story for me was at their house Their house was just outside the walls of Lucca, so a couple of kilometers outside the wall. But they attached to their house, they had a little negozio, so they used to, my grandfather raised his own pigs, so he made all his own salumi.
Wow.
So when this whole salumi fad came to pass, yeah. I just thought to myself, this has been done for like centuries. I don't know what's so new about making salami or prosciutto or the smell of the curing salt they can still smell in the back of the house. So incredible. We used to have lunch at her house, which consisted of, you know, antipasti to start, and if you can get past that course, and it was a little insalata, a little brodo, a little maybe a cup of soup, and then a pasta course, and then she would raise her own rabbits, her own chickens, and she would kill them that morning. Cook a rabbit, cook a chicken, maybe a little pork loin, and you have a rosti misti, so all the roasts are mixed roasts with little potatoes, baby potatoes, whatever field vegetables she had that day. And that was lunch, and then a little cheese at the end.
How long would this take? How long would you spend
lunch,
on the table?
Well, lunch,
two,
you know,
3 hours?
The shops close at 12:30. Yeah. They shut down. My uncle was a worked for Risparmio di Lucca. He was a banker, but he left his office at 12:30, got home by 1. Lunch was 1 to 3:30, 4 o'clock every day. It was a 2-2.5 hour lunch.
And then people would go back to work.
The stores reopen at about 5 o'clock in Lucca, yeah, just like they do in a lot of little towns in the north. But it's like you mentioned.
It's like that in Barcelona.
People just don't take the time, and yeah, they think, you know, like the whole slow food movement. You know, it's more than just food. It's actually enjoying the people that you're, you know, having the food, the meal with.
Yeah. I mean, I think of it, and I'm not really exaggerating. In a lot of ways, it's like the reason to live.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like you work all the time. Yeah. Why?
Well, that's...
But you spend 2.5-3.5 hours around the table at lunch. It's like, okay, that's why. Yeah. That works.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, the old phrase, you know, we always did, the joke was in Italy, you work to live, and in the U.S. we live to work. So the opposite, you know. So it's, you know...
How many, for both of you, how many of your Italian traditions have you been able to hang on to with your families?
Well, the biggest one for us is making wine. So that's kind of obvious. I think from the Scotto standpoint, it was, well, we've carried on the essence of sticking together as a family. So I drove actually today from the Valley. And not Napa Valley, but
you came
the
all
Central
the way
Valley.
Up from the Central Valley.
I did, yeah.
Just to be on Mouthful.
I did.
I am really flattered. Thank you, Bradley.
Well, Michelle was also Rob's food. I mean, this is dynamite stuff. But I think from our family, it's always been, as I said, I left a family get together. So it was my sister and my sister in law are expecting 2 new additions to our family. So it was, I don't know, 30 of us, and it was just my immediate family. But that's always been something that we've carried on. I think the Italian tradition has been getting together and always over meals.
Mm-hmm.
I guess also our Italian names too. So
oh yes,
both my son Santino and Roman both have Anthony as their middle name.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
And why America? Why are you here?
That's a great question. My dad came when he was 21, actually, so pretty late, and one of the only ones, and he only has one brother. So it's always an interesting conversation because people assume that you come from a family of like 14 because you're Italian. And the funny thing is after the war, especially in the town of Lucca, most of the families went from multiple children down to maybe 2 or 3, and so the really sharp decline. And so my dad has one brother, my mom has one brother, and they're from the same area, so very small, not really that big of a family. Mm-hmm. But my dad came actually chasing love, probably, so my mom came. So that's a relatively new immigration into the U.S. So I mean, I'm only first generation born in California. Uh-huh. but it's so much like the landscape is so similar to where my dad's from that it's just that's why everybody's here. I mean, it's very similar to being outside of Lucca. Don't have the antiquity of it, but other than that,
driving through Tuscany, and even to some degree driving through, I guess Liguria, you could see resemblances too.
Yeah, yeah, that's why we have a lot of Genovese and then. Yeah, in the area also. So, it's. I mean, we kept the tradition. I think as well. My oldest son's name is Matteo. My middle son's name is Marco Giovanni, and my daughter's name is Pia Teresa. But even though my wife is Jewish, nothing to do with Italian, but it's a perfect mix, same guilt, so it works.
Yeah.
But
did you grow up? Did people speak Italian?
Yeah. Well, I grew up. I was fortunate that we used to travel back to Tuscany once every 3 years or so. We would stay for 2 months in the summertime, and that's a very special gift that my parents gave to me by
being able to do that.
That's where I learned the language, even though I studied it further in college at Davison. I'm an Aggie, and I really dig the fact that your brother's an Aggie, which makes us even better.
An Aggie?
And my
He's
wife.
An Aggie. And his wife. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah, they're both
I mean,
Davis.
You studied agriculture
no,
at Davis?
No. UC Davis Aggies.
Tell me.
The mascot.
Oh, it's the mascot.
Aggie. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know
we
that.
We have to stick together, yeah.
Okay.
But
okay.
No, that's so it's a... Yeah, the tradition is kind of for me it's kind of part of my inbred part of my life, so the way we live day by day. So, but definitely centered around food and wine. It's just the way it's always been. Yeah. I don't know.
And what is your role at the restaurant?
Well, basically, what I run the front of the house and I do all the wine buying and purchasing. Mm-hmm. So, I've over the last 20 years I've become a big, I love wine. I love exploring. So that's what we try and do with the with the wine list and with the Enoteca is to go beyond the confines of what people are used to drinking and try and get them a little bit outside the box.
What do you find are the trends that if people are willing to go outside the box, where are they going these days?
You know, it's funny. Right now, the interesting thing is people are spending a lot of money on Pinot Noir. Because it's it hasn't really seen a downturn at all. It seems like to me, price wise, as a buyer on the backside, Pinot has not suffered at all. But it's funny because I think you can. It's difficult because you see European, you see French and Italian as values in the market, and it's getting people to try. I'm pouring a little Cahors on my list, a little French Malbec.
And
people are like, this is Malbec and this is from France. And they're like, and they're like, how much? And then you tell them, they're like, really? I think people are shocked that, it's just that we get ingrained in drinking Chardonnay, and certain varietals that are, to taste where they actually originated. Sometimes you go to Burgundy and taste Chardonnay from.
Oh, Chardonnay from Burgundy. It's California Chardonnay.
Well,
Sorry.
It's just, no,
I just
but there are producers that in the valley, like where we are, that make, for example, Hanzel, that make it in the way it's supposed to. If you prefer drinking Merceau or, white Burgundy, they make it that style. But, it's just getting people a little bit, same variety, but maybe a little bit outside the box a little bit. So it's, But that's the fun part for me is trying to get somebody to try something that they and to get the gain the trust is taking years. So my regular customers, when you started and you're only 25, they look at you like he doesn't know anything about wine. But as you get a little older and you start, they go, oh, this is incredible. Next time they go, pick me something.
Yeah.
And then you start having fun. Yeah. So that's the number four.
Back to Scotto. Mm-hmm. Scotto, what? How many varietals are you?
Well, I don't know where to start. So
that's okay. I got to look at your shoes. Those are awesome.
Oh, thank you.
I just got my grandson those shoes.
Nike Air Jordans. Yeah, I love them. My low tops. They're comfy. But I think to play off what Rob was saying, what we're seeing now is as consumers, people are interested in trying new things as long as they're exposed to them. And what we try to really focus on is what people want, what are people asking for, and then getting them to try them. So getting back to the varietals that we make, Cabernet, Chardonnay, Merlot, Pinot Noir, Pinot Grigio, Moscato, Shiraz, Red Blends, Zinfandel, Old Vine Zins from Lodi. We do an Old Vine Zin from Napa as well. That is, I hate to say that we get bored with it because I don't think you can ever get bored with a specific wine or a varietal. But what we really enjoy doing are coming up with interesting takes on wine. We've made pomegranate wine where we've blended it with Moscato.
Really?
And it's dynamite stuff. And people are willing to take
really?
The time to
That's
try
interesting.
It.
That's interesting.
What Brad is going to pour now has been an awesome product for us. It's a 6%
Chardonnay
alcohol,
peach.
Chardonnay peach. And it's 100% all natural. And it's got
a little bit of a fizz
to it.
Yeah.
It's not overly sweet. It's balanced. There's a nice acid to it. But people are interested in kind of venturing out. And this is what's really interesting to us, is coming up with these new takes on using wine and creating not necessarily a wine that somebody would drink, a wine drinker taking away from their Chardonnay. They're going to continue to buy Chardonnay. But this is something that's different, unique, that's not going to replace their current favorite household Chardonnay.
I got to tell you, it has an amazing bouquet. Amazing,
though, thank you.
Wow. That is...
Oh, that's awesome.
That is really unusual. It's
this is what's fun and exciting. I mean, I don't want to, sound too down on the typical wine stuff, but what we've really found to be exciting is coming up with unique ways to use wine and produce what we think are outstanding products. It's just
this reminds me of French toast.
Yes.
I just found it. French toast.
And it's all about finding a reliable partner in getting this out to expose to people, right? And having the opportunity to say, well, I'll take a chance on this, and I think that this would go well with some type of pudding dessert or something like that. But it's 6%, so it's not...
6% is awesome. You can drink more.
And it's not watered down.
Uh-huh. It's really interesting. Yeah. Now, before... Bradley, before you poured this one, you poured another one that we have ignored.
Yeah.
It's a much deeper red.
I definitely
red.
Want to get back to that. That's okay. What we're here for. And I think it really belongs with Rob's food, too.
It's our first entry into that Napa Valley Cabernet product. And this is our family's 50th anniversary in terms of harvest here in California. And while my dad and my grandfather grew up in Brooklyn, they were still making wine here in California from their dinner table and from the kitchen, and putting the bringing the blends back to California, making them here in the winery. Yeah, absolutely. Uh-huh. So what we wanted to do was celebrate our 50th harvest with a 2011 Napa Valley Cabernet. We did a very limited release. We have, I believe, 100 six-packs that we produced, and we actually haven't released it yet. So this is really the first time we've tried it with somebody.
It says bottle one.
Yeah,
bottle one. Oh, well, and tell us the name of it again.
It's called 50 Harvests.
50 Harvests. And tell us the grapes.
100%
Cabernet. 100%
Cabernet. Absolutely.
Okay, wow. And it's bottle one. That is a first.
Absolutely.
On mouthful. And on that note, we are going to take another musical break. I think it warrants a really nice aria. It's Mouthful. We are definitely having a great time. Food, wine, and the best opera in the world. How can you go wrong? So it is Anthony Scotto. Did I get it right? Anthony Scotto of Scotto Cellars and Rob Della Santina of Della Santina Restaurant and Enoteca in the town of Sonoma, along with Bradley Gray, who set this whole thing up and is pouring for us. Wow. This is just really, really good. Almost overwhelmingly good. What are we? I want to see the label of that wine.
So the
50
that,
Harvest.
Yeah, the 50 Harvest label. We actually haven't even had the labels printed yet. So this was a generic label that I printed off of my HP printer in the office.
Wow.
50 Harvest, that's great. A 2011 Napa Valley Cabernet Sauvignon. 13, and it's only 13.
Well, yeah, that's
9.
That's a rarity too.
Yeah.
Again,
that's
it goes
a
back
great
to
thing. Thank you.
Pairing well with food and not being an overpowered.
I mean, you start getting up over 14, and it really starts eclipsing food.
Yeah.
I can't read that. What's it say? Get to a microphone. Tell.
There's not very many bottles.
Oh, okay. Oh,
well, Brad, we went over that earlier. We did.
Oh yeah, that's bottle number one, which
bottle
is pretty
one,
awesome.
106 packs. And this is really the first time we've tasted it. Yeah, outside of the family members.
Mouthful is really flattered. I want to go back to the restaurant now and talk about just some of the things that are on the menu. Sure. And it's dinner only. You don't do lunch, do you?
We do lunch and dinner,
Oh, you do lunch?
We do lunch and dinner, yeah.
Have you always done lunch?
Always done lunch, yeah.
Okay, then my mistake.
No, it's all right. Yeah, no. We've been on lunch for, it seems, it's been 7 days a week forever, too, yeah.
Wow, 7 days a week.
It's been a long time. But yeah, no, we're
getting a big vote of confidence here for the food from Lark. So, Lark, you have to be quiet. Yes, you're on the radio. You have to be quiet now. I knew you'd like Italian food. So is the lunch and dinner, are the lunch and dinner menus the same, or do they change?
They're pretty similar. We do a little panini at lunchtime. So we'll do some panini with the salumi, like, you know, prosciutto, salami, pancetta, and we do a roasted, we'll do a pork loin sandwich, or we do a vegetarian. And we have a beautiful sausage, Tuscan sausage, that we do also in a sandwich. But the main thrust of the rotisserie, the rotisserie chicken and the rotisserie duck, we still do at lunch and dinner. And the pastas are pretty similar. We'll rotate a little bit at lunchtime, different. But we try to stay true to the menu the way it's been for, you know, a while. The menu has not changed, but we do rotate the specials. But the menu, you know, like I said, we make our own pappardelle, we make our own linguine, cannelloni.
Good pappardelle, it's just one of the best.
And Michelle, you know about the gnocchi.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, why is the gnocchi I had, it's so ethereal. It's like a cloud. It's just really extraordinary.
I had one gentleman one night that complained because the gnocchi weren't al dente enough, so I almost handed him my key and said, "The restaurant's yours." I quit. I said, "If gnocchi are supposed to be al dente, then I'm in the wrong business."
Yeah, where's that guy been eating? Jeez.
Exactly.
No, they're beautiful.
No, they have to have enough form to stay formed, and then they have to have enough, and then they have to dissolve in your mouth.
Float off the plate.
Well, that's why when I get people from around the country, they don't want to order it because they're hesitant, and I usually try and bring them some just so they can. So they understand what they're supposed to taste like and not, you know, what they're used to. Because you can buy packaged gnocchi now. And they're kind of like rubber balls. But you can, you know, it's just one of those dishes that, you know, we've been doing for a long time. Yeah. So
it's the same sort of thing has happened with risotto. Somebody sent me an email a while ago and said, "What's up with al dente risotto? What are they talking about?"
Well, al dente is a big push because, you know, That's a difficult thing because some people prefer their, you know,
you don't
pasta.
Want soggy pasta.
Exactly. I mean, but the difficulty, like when people ask for al dente and you're making fresh pasta, it's not possible. It's almost impossible. Yeah. If you have a dried pasta, then that's a different story. But fresh pasta, it's very difficult to make. But yeah, risotto. I mean, it's interesting because you say, you know, al dente. You cook risotto like that. In a restaurant setting, it's very different than cooking risotto at your house because you're making a single batch in your house and you're serving it. When you're serving it in a restaurant, you have to pre-cook your risotto. So it has to be cooked super al dente.
Yeah.
And then you just add it into – exactly. But it's a little tricky. But, yeah, I mean, al dente – I mean, There's people that are.
I forget
sticky.
Who it was. Somebody just they sent me a little rant, and it wasn't a rant at me. It was just
it was just a rant,
and I know you'll understand. It's like yes, I understand, and I don't know what it is.
A lot of time, it depends on the product because if you're using good Arborio, it's always gonna good Arborio is gonna always hold its form.
Now, what do you think about the other two, Carnaroli and Violoni Nano?
I mean, I guess I'm not a pro enough to distinguish the difference. It's just that, I mean, when you're using decently good product, you know, that definitely makes a huge difference. Yeah. So, I mean,
I became a real fan of Violoni Nano.
Okay.
It's the most delicate
texture. Okay.
It's just beautifully delicate. It's the Pinot Noir of rice.
What's fun? Risotto is a fun dish because I think my most enjoyable time making risottos is sounds strange, but with friends we were in Hawaii in the islands.
Where? And which island?
In Kauai in Poipu.
Okay. Okay.
Kauai is my island. That's my spot, but. I think the fun thing about doing it in Kauai was that we had access to, I think we had some Arborio that I brought, but you're looking for mushrooms and no better place than Japanese influence because I found some dried shiitakes and I made a mushroom stock and then I was able to use the mushroom stock back into the risotto and then use those mushrooms as well. And people were like, you know, and I had some, I think I brought some grana with me or something, a little Parmigiano, but, you know, it's fantastic. You know, you're like, you're in the islands, you're making risotto, but it was fun.
Absolutely.
It's always fun to cook, and especially when you're friends. And but yeah, the risotto is always, it's always a pleasure to do wherever you are, but I could eat it. I mean, I've had it in Venice in the wintertime, just with a little shaved white truffle. Very simple, but I mean, the flavor.
And I had, what was it? I had risotto amarone.
There you go. With the color.
In Verona.
Oh, yeah, well, that's...
In an old restaurant in Verona with a raw artichoke salad beforehand. Nice. And, of course, a glass of amarone. It was wonderful.
That's there's a restaurant there as a little kid I went to called I 12 Apostoli, the 12 Apostles. Mm. And it's you're eating in a room with 30-foot ceilings and frescoes, and it's like you feel like you're in a museum eating dinner. You're like, I don't even feel like I
and you're in
touch
Verona.
Anything.
Hey, you're in Verona. That's beautiful. Which is amazing.
How does that, when you're experiencing food or a dish like that in an environment, does it really affect, do you think, the way that you're tasting the product and
definitely.
Eating it?
Yeah,
it does.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Without a doubt. Definitely. And, you know, it was funny, just before I left to come here, I turned on television, and Anthony Bourdain's new show, which I actually think is pretty good. He was in Sicily.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was hilarious. It was in Sicily. And I love Sicily. I love Sicilian food. And I know when I first went to Sicily, or the only time I've been to Sicily, and ate the Sicilian food that I knew of here and ate it there.
Oh, very different.
Very different.
Different and at the same time, the same.
Yeah.
I recognized it. It wasn't like, oh, this is so different. It was like, okay. Yeah. You know, maybe it was a couple shadows removed. It was really interesting. And this one was hilarious. They tried to, they scammed him. They took him out into the, this tour guy took him out into the Mediterranean, and he was going to go diving for octopus, abalone, cuttlefish and stuff. And so he's diving, and they're throwing dead fish into the water. And the whole story spins off of that. It was hilarious. It's like, oh, my gosh, this is so Sicilian.
That's fantastic.
It was perfect. And, you know, I only saw a few minutes of it because I was leaving. But my grandson, who's with me right now, he had done a school report on Sicily. So I turned it on for him. But it was great. And, okay, what do we drink? Are we drinking something else? Or are you just taking pictures, Bradley?
Yes.
So we have. Let's sum up what we've had. We have had Della Santina's Sauvignon Blanc. And then we had that very soft one from Scotto.
Yeah, that's our Napa by Napa.
That's right, Napa by Napa.
Yeah. The Napa Red Blend.
Right. And then we had the 50 Harvests.
The 2011 Napa Valley Cabernet, the limited release, about 100... 106 packs.
Right. And then we have this new white wine that Bradley's poured, but we haven't had yet, correct?
No, we did try it. That was the fruit and vine.
Oh, that's right. The fruit. That's right. Yeah. That's the one with
the
Chardonnay and peach.
Yeah, I brought the peach Chardonnay. It's 6%.
That's right. We did try
it. Very soft.
floral.
Which is totally interesting, yeah.
Yeah, it's, interesting. We do a peach
what
Chardonnay.
What would you serve this with? At the end of the meal, for sure.
It'd be nice with a, I was thinking about pouring, I don't know, floating a little, I don't know, it looks like a little vanilla bean gelato. That, in that yeah.
It might even be good with tiramisu.
Oh,
it yeah, might. But it just, it tastes so like French toast.
Yeah.
Great.
Absolutely like French toast, because you got the eggs going on, you got the richness.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the toast from frying it in the pan yeah. and the butter.
It's fantastic.
So if people want to try Scotto wines and they're in Sonoma County, what's the best way to do that?
Let's see. We do a lot of business with Molly Stone.
We're not, we don't have Molly Stone.
Oh, there's
in
no
Sonoma
Molly
County.
Stones
no, that's
in Sonoma.
In Marin.
Okay, Fircrest Market.
Fircrest, I was just there on my
yeah.
way here.
Yeah, okay. One of our brands that we do a lot of business with many of the independent retailers here in Sonoma County is a brand called Rare Red. And it's okay. a dynamite table field blend. And it's a...
Oh, and you have it here.
Yeah, we okay. brought a bottle of it. And it's really your everyday drinking Wednesday night with burgers or some sort of pasta dish on Sunday, go-to wine. And
okay.
it's you can find it at any one of your independent retailers here in Sonoma.
Okay, and what's it sell for?
It's under $10.
Under $10, okay,
yeah.
cool. right on.
Another one.
And we also sell it, I believe,
Wines
at
for the Recession.
Yeah.
oh, and at Cost Plus, because yeah, we definitely have... We have at least one Cost Plus. Yeah, I think one. I don't think there's one in Petaluma.
Is some of your stuff at Sonoma Market, too?
Sonoma Market there as well, yeah.
Sonoma
absolutely.
Market. Yeah. Maybe Oliver's Market?
Oliver's has, especially the Rare Red. We've sold Oliver some of the Rare okay. Red. It's a very popular brand here in Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay, and we are pouring it now.
And maybe we'll have some at Enoteca del Santina, too.
Dynamite. yeah, this wine caught us by surprise. It was one of those items where we weren't quite sure what we had, but you hit on a flavor profile again, yeah. and it was blending. We blend four different varietals in here, and it was really going after the same glass over and over again. It was
again,
smooth,
it's got
easy to drink.
A nice texture. Very drinkable. Yeah, that's very nice. And for under 10, that's remarkable. Yeah. Yep. That is really remarkable. And then, you know, we really don't have that much time left. We only have like 3 to 4 minutes. For people who want to come to Della Santina,
yeah,
let's
absolutely.
Give them the deep. Do you have a website?
We do. DellaSantinas.com. Very
there
easy. And also EnotecaDelSantina.com. So we have two different websites, one for the wine bar uh-huh. and retail shop, and one for the restaurant. But
you don't offer rides to and from Sebastopol, do you?
that's
thing.
On my next
day. That's the thing that kills it.
I know.
Or,
you know.
Or how about from Lodi?
Yeah, there you go.
That's what kills it is like that 0.08.
I know. Well, it's that. That's a whole other issue that's hurt a lot of the industry.
Yeah.
But, man, I've lived in Sonoma for a long time, and it is the benchmark go-to restaurant in
fabulous.
Downtown
yeah.
Sonoma.
It's
and I agree with you, Michelle, that gnocchi is...
I need to come over and have some gnocchi.
Well, no,
I
definitely.
Really
we'd love to have you over. But
I
it's
really
it's Sonoma's interesting because it's we seem to have gotten in our own way as far as marketing the town, but it just keeps drawing mm-hmm. people... By itself, it's the un-Napa. It's
yeah,
you know, it's
and
just,
it was the first go-to town
yeah.
in Sonoma County.
Well, I mean, we've been leapfrogged by Healdsburg, obviously, because they've done a great job with promoting the town and the way they. And we kind of stayed true to the old school, the way it is, and
yeah.
and it's attracting the crowd that doesn't want to be. They want to really be on vacation, meaning they
yeah.
want to be relaxed.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of crowd that we're getting now. It's neat. So
that's great.
We kind of attracted a really that's cool great. Visitor.
And I really like the ducks, and I really like the chickens.
Oh, that's fantastic. yeah, like, I know. The ducks are still there. The chickens have been removed.
Are the chickens gone?
No, they're still there. They just moved down the street.
Oh, okay. Because, you
yes.
know, those chickens who would just go into every business, you know.
That's crazy. I know. It's a good time. It's you know, It's a nice town to live. It's a nice town to live in. Nice town to have a business in, and a great town to raise a family. So it's and a great. And it's the closest spot from San Francisco.
Absolutely,
easy to get to.
Very easy to
easy
get
to. Get to. Definitely.
Yeah, you get to get off 101
yes.
earlier.
Yes.
earlier than
exactly.
you know going all the way to Petaluma,
yeah.
and that I mean I drive down to Marin County every Thursday,
yeah.
and watching what is happening on 101 right now, and
it's
what's going to happen. They're predicting I think something like 48,000 more cars a day. as soon as this casino that's our next door neighbor now opens. Ooh. So 101 is just going to be increasingly insane, and it's going to be easier and easier to just zip over on the back roads to Sonoma.
Yeah, exactly.
So check out Della Santina. That's what Ms. Mouthful says. And you are so many businesses. Scotto Sellers is so many businesses.
Scotto,
how do we find out?
Best Scotto. Place is ScottoSellers.com.
Okay.
And it'll give you an idea on the family, the history, and the many brands that we produce at our three distinct wineries.
Okay. Scotto Sellers. And I will always say it that way. Scotto Sellers. Beautiful. Okay. And on that note, we are out of time. Thank you so much. You're not going back to the Central Valley tonight, are you?
No, I actually live in the East Bay, but I'll be driving out to Lodi tomorrow morning. We're still crushing grape.
Okay. Well, you drive carefully.
I will. Thank you.
Drive carefully back to Sonoma, both of you. Thank you, Bradley, for putting this together. Thanks to all of you for this.
Fantastic.
And thanks to you for tuning in. And next week, don't miss the return of Chef John Ash, who has a brand new book out. It is Culinary Birds, the Ultimate Poultry Cookbook. I said that will be John Ash live in the studio next Sunday here on Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour with Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Praises be.
Praises be.
Praises be.
Praises be.
Praises be.
Praises be.
Praises be.